Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm the net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. It's been going strong for 44-plus years. Every Sunday night at around 8 o'clock, we sit around in front of our radios, and we chat with each other, and we educate each other, we learn from each other, and hopefully we entertain each other. And I thank you again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. to do it all over again. This is our Passover/Easter edition, so I thank you all for attending, as per usual. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual link. Okay. If you want to reach me via email, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. That would be for mailbag questions, for volunteering to do a presentation on some form of technology that's made it into the news that you are particularly well aware of and can teach us. Or if you have a TechNet puzzle, which are as rare as hen's teeth, I happen to have one in my back pocket, which I'll take out sometime in the next month or so when it's a good time for it. Or if you want me to tap pull WS2N on the shoulder and have him take a look at some NASA or space-related story, of course, you can contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. Also, I have a link page. It has all kinds of interesting articles. I cut and paste them through the week, and I offer them to you. If you're a little bored, a little touch of insomnia, and you want to read something that I found interesting. In addition, today is a very special TechNet. We have a guest speaker, Jay, NE2Q, and he recently wrote an article in QSD. The article is available at the top of my link page. So if you didn't read his article in QST and you want to take a quick look at it, it's available. Just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and it'll bring it up at the very top of the page. You might have to magnify it a little bit, but it's right there at the very top. So that's the link page. We maintain a chat room. Sometimes it's very busy. Sometimes it's quiet as quiet could be, much like 10 meters. And you can get to it by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. So that brings you to the chat room. And as I've mentioned before, we stream the technical net on the Internet. And I leave the stream live the rest of the week because a couple people asked me to. So if you'd like to know what's happening on Glen Oaks and you don't have a radio near you, type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll give you the link to the stream. And I always like to remind people of MikeKC2NJI. He has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. It has archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. A lot of wisdom there. Unfortunately, a lot of those people on those recordings have either moved far away or become silent keys over the years. So their wisdom is still available in the form of audio recordings. So avail yourself of them. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we got planned for tonight. Okay, so we will forego the artificial intelligence and the delete discussions because nothing much new has been happening on either front over the last week. As I mentioned earlier, we have a special guest speaker, Jay NE2Q. He wrote an article in QST in the April edition, and he was kind enough to offer his presence to discuss that and other aspects of antenna technology. So I'm certainly looking forward to it. If you have a chance, you know, look it up on my link page and do a quick read on it. It's only two pages. Anyway, first we will, though, accept a list of people for questions and topics and comments. I'll write it down. And then Chet, WB2AHK will introduce Jay, and Jay will speak, and when Jay is finished, we'll go back to our list that we have for tonight. Hopefully that should take us to approximately 10:15, and Paul WS2N will bring on the SpaceNet report, and that should take us approximately to 11 p.m., and I will return then to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. Let us hope that the repeater works, the radios work, the laws of physics work, and I don't get thrown off of All-Star too many times tonight. So that's the plan. So as I said before, we will accept questions, comments, and topics. Preferably the first few should be amateur radio related, because this is an amateur radio net. So please hit that push to talk, give me your first name, give me your call sign, give me what kind of content you have planned. And when we finish with the preliminary list, we'll shift gears and move over to Chet. So everyone who wants to put their name on the list for later tonight, please hit that push to talk.
PC, amateur radio related.
NYXC, amateur radio related.
Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Please hit that push to talk. Okay, hopefully later on there'll be some more people with some more questions or topics or comments. Well, Chet, over to you.
Hi, everybody. This is Chet, WB2, Alpha Hotel, Keller, Floral Park, New York. Roy, I want to check with you to make sure. What is the timeout on the input to the repeater? Is it 3 minutes or whatever? What is it? Over.
I believe it's 3 minutes.
All right, everybody. Occasionally, I'm going to do some dropping here. All right. Welcome, assembled members and listeners of the Lime Rock TechNet. Tonight we have a special presentation, a guest speaker, none other than NE2Q. It's Jay Kolinsky of Pound Ridge, New York. As many know, Jay is a very successful businessman of well over 60 years. He is a very resourceful idea man. Many of us, including me, sometimes come up with good ideas, but do we do anything with them? But Jay does. Jay does not just conjure up ideas, he actually puts his ideas into play. Those who know him can attest that he has been financially successful in so many fields. Jay has been an amateur radio operator for many years, first licensed in 1958, 67 years in active ham. Jay's main ham radio passion, for the most part, has been churned into the lower HF bands. Let me let it drop for 1 second. He has, over the years, made many iterations of antennas. He has designed and installed many, many antennas. Besides his extensive property for which to build wire antennas, he also installed an 80-foot crank-up tower. At this time, I understand he has a 7-element Yagi on a 42-foot boom. He loves DX. And many a night talks to his buddies in the VK land, Australia, VIA, the long path. Jay, besides for business purposes, has visited his ham friends located in far places all around the world. His large property in Pound Ridge, New York, allows him the freedom to try out different types of antennas. While he is not at EE, Over the years, he has learned very well the craft of designing HF antennas. Let me let it drop. For those persons listening on the TechNet tonight who might have antenna questions, I am sure Jay might stick around a bit and try to be of assistance, and maybe perhaps can steer you in the right direction. His curiosity and skills in the area of HF communication is boundless. For a break from HF communications, Jay and his fellow ham club members sometimes chases Fox transmitters, hiding in hidden places. He really enjoys getting out in the field doing Fox events. No one should be jealous of him. He busted his AZZ as and stuck to his plan. Good for him. It's easy to see that being up on that mountaintop, JNE2Q is living the ham radio dream. Because of his hard work and success in business, he was able to purchase property on what is probably the highest place in lower New York State. This 7-acre QTH sits on a ridge something over 800-900-something feet, overlooking a good 40-mile swatch of Long Island, with a bird's-eye view of New York City, including Brooklyn and the Bronx, and eastbound out over Long Island Sound all the way out to Port Jefferson. He's not simply a lucky fellow. He busted you know what, took chances and persevered. He is a determined man. Years and years ago, it was his goal in the back of his mind to set up a ham radio station up in a special place. Well, he did it his way. He simply loves ham radio. He's a ham's ham. He was able to design his house to his personal needs. At the top of his house, he had a contract to build a cupola room to be his ham station radio room. At nighttime, with the radio room lights on, Jay's cupola sort of resembles a lighthouse. No, Jay was not born rich. His family came over from Europe with a dream to become wealthy in America someday. Hard work was never a problem for Mr. Jay Kolinsky. Some of you at Lime Rock might know him personally. They know that Jay has traveled all over the Orient and the world, seeking out or in actually building production facilities to manufacture his many inventions, which have been quite many. He never seems to sleep. His mind seems to be ever alert for new opportunities. At this point of his life, I would believe it is not to just make more money, but instead it's his passion to create more successful products from his active imagination. Many of you know Jay from his many published articles in QST magazine. An example can be found in this month's QST, which features another great article that Jay has submitted. All right, for those who do not get QST magazine, tonight Jay has volunteered to take the time to step up to the plate and read his article to our listeners. So, without further ado, please welcome Mr. Jay Kolinsky, NE2Q. How do you do? Take it away, Jay.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Hopefully I'm getting into the repeater. Give a quick check here. Jet, you still hearing?
Yeah, you're still coming in. Maybe you could just be a little bit louder, but it's not too bad at all. It's very... It's pretty good. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, Chet, for all those nice comments. Sometimes when I hear these comments about myself, I'm wondering who are they really talking about. Anyway, Chet mentioned I'm in Pound Ridge, New York. That's in the northeast corner of Westchester County. I'm very close to Bedford, New York. Pound Ridge is a small town, about 4,000 population. And we're right on the border of the north end of Stamford, Connecticut. And I probably have line of sight with the your repeater antenna from up here. I have gotten into it with an HT with 10 milliwatts. So hopefully my signal doesn't disappear. Okay. Jet asked me to read the article. It's titled, Turn Your Vertical Antenna into a Rotatable Beam. Laser-like 3-degree beamwidth thanks to a carbon fiber slotted sleeve. Many hams who use vertical antennas are dissatisfied with their performance compared to their buddies who use directional beam type antennas that concentrate their RF emissions over a narrow area of 50 to 80 degrees. There is no doubt that the azimuth antenna pattern for vertical radiators is basically a perfect circle. Your transmitted RF is spreading equally over a 360-degree circle. This is a significant waste of energy because you talk only to a station in a pinpointed area. Using a vertical antenna for receiving demonstrates that signals are received from all directions. Just like interference, man-made, and atmospheric noise, most of us have heard two common phrases. Verticals radiate poorly in all directions, and verticals are very noisy antennas. My first antenna. I read the full-page advertisements by Gotham that used to appear in QST. That was back in the 50s and the 60s. The ads featured the V80 vertical with all sorts of wild claims. I ordered one and it came in a long, skinny carton. Consisted of two aluminum tubes, one smaller than the other, to telescope into the larger tube. It was held together at a joint with a hose clamp and was about 21 feet long when fully assembled. There was also an air-wound coil about 3 inches in diameter. The idea was to put an alligator clip on the center of the coax feed line and tap the coil at different points for operation on 10 to 80 meters. I installed the antenna on the side of my father's summer home in Mohegan Lake, New York, and it worked. I made contacts, but very few signals outside of the U.S. were heard. I used it until 1962 when I built a two-element 20-meter quad antenna using bamboo arms with a fiberglass tape coating. The quad outperformed my Gotham V80 vertical on 20 meters. I've always been a creative thinker and developed new products over the years. Some of my early inventions are in the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C., and I even have a few U.S. patents. One day I was thinking about the shortcomings of verticals. I wondered, how about turning a single vertical element into a narrow beamwidth directive aerial? Carbon fiber to the rescue. I heard someone mention that carbon fiber tubing will distort RF antenna patterns, which made me realize that a sleeve of carbon fiber slipped over a vertical element might severely restrict RF from escaping from a vertical. I quickly obtained a 10-foot tube of carbon fiber, 2 inches in diameter, and decided to experiment. I installed my quarter-wave 2-meter mag mount vertical antenna on the center of the roof of my car and took readings with my field strength meter 50 feet away. I ran 25 watts and recorded the 20% field strength needle deflection. Then I slipped a 20-inch long carbon fiber tube over the 19-inch whip, as shown in figure 1, and I was shocked The field strength meter showed no reading at all, as shown in figure 2, even with 100 watts to the antenna. The slot. I quickly removed the carbon fiber tube and headed to my basement for my table saw. I cut a 1/16 inch long slot across the entire length of the 20 inch tube. My theory was that the slot would allow the RF to escape through the narrow opening and in the direction of the slot. I placed the slotted sleeve back over the magnet mount and did more field strength tests. I carefully rotated the slot in the tubing so it faced the exact direction of the field strength meter. To my amazement, the field strength meter pinned at full max. I started to lower the transmitted power and was able to get the same reading I got with no sleeve installed on 25 watts, but now I was transmitting with only 1 watt. Obviously, the theory proved to work, and I now have a vertical beam that would send my RF to a very narrow portion of the globe, depending on where the open slot was facing. Narrow beamwidth. Calculations for a 2-inch diameter pipe show a circumference of about 6.8 inches. Because there are 112 individual 1/16 inch segments in a 6.8 inch diameter circumference, a 1/16 inch slot provides close to a mind-boggling 3-degree vertical plane beamwidth. This is significantly smaller than typical results with common beam antennas and provides concentrations of RF energy into very narrow portions of the globe when using this concept with HF verticals. On the air 20 meter performance. I like to chat with DX stations, so I tried the slotted sleeve concept on a new quarter wave 20 meter vertical ground plane with the base about 1/2 wave above ground. With the open slot facing Europe, it outperformed my 5-element 20-meter Yagi by an astounding 5-6 S units. Receiving was very quiet, and the power line and atmospheric noise were eliminated over a 357-degree arc. I am now working on a small direct current motor that will allow remote rotation of the slotted sleeve to any part of the globe. The concept is easy to duplicate, and I suggest that anyone who has been disappointed by their vertical try their own slotted sleeve. After 2 years of use on 20 meters, many hams have asked what the name of the antenna is. For short, I call it the LLS, Loop Lerpa Slot. And that, gentlemen, is the end of the article. There is a warning that says, caution, extreme RF exposure. Do not stand near the open slot when running more than 5 watts, because you will probably exceed the RF energy exposure levels referenced by the FCC mandates. Okay, I'll turn it back to Roy. This is NE2Q.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Jay. Jay, actually, I'm a customer. I'm using Jay's headset right now as I talk to you all. So I've known Jay somewhat for over 8 years. I've even chatted a few times on the 10-meter net with him. So he's a unique individual. So that was Jay's article. If anyone has any questions regarding that particular article, I'm sure Jay would be more than happy to answer.
WTBZ.
Yeah, Rich?
Okay, hi, my name is Rich, as Roy just said. I'm wondering if you ever motorized the carbon fiber tube.
Yes. I did motorize it, yes. But the antenna is very difficult to aim because it's only a 3-degree beam width. And you have to be very careful in aiming it. Go ahead.
Okay, and are you still using it today? How long ago did you invent this antenna?
A couple of years ago. I've been using the 20-meter version for a couple of years now.
What are the dimensions of the vertical?
The 20-meter vertical is about, it's a quarter wave. It's about 17 feet long.
Okay, and do you use a counterpoise of any kind?
Yes. There are four radials. It is elevated. The base of it is about half wave high. The radials are drooping at a 45-degree angle, so it gives me a good 50-ohm impedance at the frequency I tuned it for.
Okay, so there are no coils or loading coils of any kind?
That is correct.
Okay. Because I'm about to build a vertical for myself, and I'll wait till the question and answer period comes along, and I'll have some questions for you. So back to Roy, W2BZ.
Question.
Yeah, Wes, you want to ask a question? Feel free.
Picture in my head the vertical dipole, quarter wave, and it has around carbon fiber or aluminum part around with a slot for 1/8 of an inch. And I simply do not understand that. So it looks like slotted waveguide work, but I do not understand how the structure works. So I would appreciate if you could explain it to me. Interaction.
Okay, this is Eddie 2Q. I think I understand your question about the concept of how it works. And I think after all the questions are asked and answered, I'll get to the entire concept of the antenna. Go ahead there, Roy.
Okay, very good. I was wondering, Jay, did you do any antenna simulation software work for this, or is it all just in real life?
Well, I've been using EasyNet pretty much since it came out. It's got to be at least 25 years. EasyNet has no, I could not figure any way to model it, to model a carbon fiber tube on EasyNet. Maybe somebody knows how and they can let me know. Roy, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, it's true. I mean, there are some ways, some aspects of antenna modeling that are significantly difficult to model on. It's great software. I've used it as well. I use it as a kind of educational tool to demonstrate predicted radiation patterns, and it generates beautiful, colorful graphics and such. But I have noticed it has a tendency of having the old a software problem of garbage in, garbage out. Have you ever seen any horror stories of people who didn't quite know how to model and got it completely wrong?
Well, yes, I have. I've come across people have that are not that used to using it. It's a very powerful software, a tether modeling software, but it takes a little while to get the hang of it. But there are some glitches. It does not handle very sharp angles other than 90-degree angles. Anything more acute, it has problems with it. And for example, if you want to make a multi-band fan dipole where the various wires meet in the center insulator, you have very acute angles, and there are special techniques of how to model that. You just can't do it the first thing that comes to your mind. It's not very, it doesn't work. It gets, you get erroneous results, so there are tricks that you have to learn. That's, I guess, advanced. Go ahead, Roy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a learning curve, but I think people are expecting error messages, and unless you get it really wrong, it doesn't usually generate error messages. It just gives you an answer for a somewhat absurd assumption that you've plugged into the software, right?
Yeah, it doesn't have very many error messages. I remember I was trying to work a model a sloper, a quarter wave wire sloper, and I started getting gains of 20 dB gain for a quarter wave sloper. I said, "No, that something's wrong here." So after further investigation, I found out it doesn't work that way. I had too sharp of an angle, and that was one of the problems with the angles, the acute angles I was talking about. But yeah, it doesn't give you, it doesn't say, "Hey, dummy, you can't do that." So many people are fooled, and I've seen people give me some wild antennas with expectations that they were going to be something revolutionary, but when further checking, we found out it was a mistake in the way they set it up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've had the same results. I mean, it's not strange for guys who were into computers 50 years ago, because I think garbage in, garbage out was one of the first computer phrases I ever learned. It's a fascinating piece of software. Like I said, I principally have been using it for educational purposes. I wrote an article on how NFED half waves operate and used a lot of pretty illustrations from the antenna simulation software. And I'm particularly happy that it's been released to the public where it doesn't cost us anything. So I always tell people that they should tinker around with it. Not necessarily believe what you put in, what came out of it based on what you put into it, but, you know, just learning how to use it is an educational thing.
Roy, I have found it to be very powerful and most of the time quite accurate. With the antennas I've designed on there and then built them, they have been very, very close in performance to the way they modeled. However, I have come across quite a few people who think after building an antenna that was modeled on EasyNIC that their antenna is optimized. And I always explain to them that it's only a starting point, the EasyNIC model. if you want to have an optimized antenna, you have to tune it when it's at the operating position. So, and I have developed methods of tuning antennas that are 60 feet high and higher while I'm standing on the ground. I've come up with the different mechanical methods to do that. So I'm able to adjust my antennas when they're in the air, not only for minimum SWR at a target frequency in the band, but I'm also able to adjust them for maximum front to back, which is pretty tricky, but it's very helpful when you have a directional antenna to have it adjusted for maximum front to back.
AC2GS, maybe you should write a QSB article on that. I'd love to read it. The problem a lot of guys have is they'd much prefer doing all their testing in a comfortable place for themselves. And so I sort of explained to them that that's not how physics work. You can't take an antenna that's designed to be, you know, 60 feet up and free from any conductive material and with very little blockage and test it on the ground on concrete with some buildings around you and expect the same type of antenna performance. But, you know, convenience seems to always out.
I find extremely few people have actually physically optimized their antenna. If they've done anything, they've adjusted for minimum SWR. And the assumption amongst most hams is, well, if I have a very low SWR, my antenna is perfectly optimized for maximum performance. That is very far from the truth. You could have a dummy load, a 50-ohm resistor at the end of your feed line, and it'll give a 1-to-1 SWR. It doesn't mean it's working very well, does it?
Yes, indeed, Jay. I've mentioned this on the TechNet many, many times. The problem is that people are most interested in measurements that are easy to do. SWR is relatively easy to do. It doesn't tell you the efficiency. It doesn't tell you the radiation pattern. It just tells you the impedance. And that's all well and good, but there's a lot more to it, as you mentioned, than just the impedance. But, I mean, this kind of goes back to last week's discussion on another antenna where I think the guy who came up with it simply extracted a number from his antenna simulator and said that it was 99.5% efficient. If you could get an actual total efficiency of the antenna system through VNAs, you would sell a mountain of VNAs or through antenna simulation software, but you can't. The problem is, and the reason that the military spends millions of dollars on anechoic chambers and arrayed RF field meters and integration software to integrate all the results in order to get a somewhat accurate reading is because that's the best way of getting an accurate reading. Wesley, you wanted to say something?
On my article.
Okay, Wesley.
My understanding is that the shape and the size of the slot, as well as the driving frequency, determine the radiation pattern of it. But I'm trying to find out what is the difference between 1946 ballot principle. Actually, no, that was an invention. That was invention by Alan Blumel in 1938. That they presented similar antenna for TV, so it was much higher frequency, but I'm amazed that you were able to apply it for HF. So, if you don't mind to say a few words about it.
Yeah, I'll get, like I said, after all the questions are asked and answered, I'll get into the real technical concept of the antenna. So if you stand by for a while, we'll get to that. Is there any other questions on the antenna design or anything like that? Over.
W2BZ.
Yeah, Rich.
Does the carbon fiber concentrate the RF power, or is it just simply the opening that lets the RF power through the carbon fiber?
Well, it's my estimation that it's the... I don't think it concentrates it. I think it just prevents it from getting out of there. And by having the slot, I guess it squirts out of that slot. So I have not really gone into, I have not had any engineers look at it to determine what was going on. I was just very happy the way it worked. So I can't give you any further details about that.
AC2GS. So, Jay, possibly an alternative name if you ever want to offer it. Under a different name would be the squirter.
Yeah. It's the slotted signal squirter, triple S.
A WA2VDH with a question.
Yes, John.
I guess this might touch on previous question. The characteristics of carbon fiber in general at RF, especially at HF frequencies, how lossy is it, how conductive is it, or even the orientation of the fiber relative to the vertical antenna. I don't know if that's something that's been characterized or not. Okay.
Well, no, it has not been characterized by yours truly. I just, when I found out somebody said that carbon fiber has a tendency to distort RF, patterns, that's when what triggered the light bulb, and I decided to try it on the 2-meter first, the 2-meter mag mount. So, with further engineering and testing is needed.
Yeah, it sounds very interesting how carbon fiber might behave, especially up at VHF. It might be more conductive than lossy, and as I say, it might act like a very intense reflector.
AC2GS. I used to have a wallet made out of carbon fiber that was sort of designed to block RFIDs.
So I guess it was acting very reflective, almost conductive, rather than being a lossy material.
Anyone with any more questions for Jay? You know, it's very seldom you get to talk to the author of a QST article here, so, take advantage of it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Jim. I'm trying to just picture in my head. If it was wider or slotted, it would be, what, 1/10,000 of the wavelength? Acting as a reflector. As far as the concentration of RF, I cannot picture that. So, it's very much interesting. to listen to all of the explanation and to exchange.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I'm reading here an article about carbon fiber, and it does say it's ideal for EMI shielding. So that's one of the benefits of it. My guess is that what's going on? Back to you, Jay.
Hello, Paul. Yes, that could be. It could be one of the characteristics of why this phenomenon with the tube, with the 2-inch diameter tube, gave the results that I did get.
Okay, thanks for that. It doesn't look like something you could readily buy in Home Depot, from what I see. These 2-inch tubes. But I guess you just send away for it. The one article I'm also reading, they said they use it in aerospace, they use it for bicycle frames, and on and on. So, okay, it's available, I assume, Jack.
Not that readily available. It's fairly expensive. Someone had contacted me after I wrote the article, and they said they use carbon fiber on fighter aircraft so that radar cannot see them. Has anybody heard about that?
No, I haven't heard that yet. I can see that. I noticed carbon fiber stuff is being used all over the place. Rocket Lab is using it for their to launch their Electron rockets. Whole rocket is made of this carbon fiber stuff. So interesting. Very good. Thank you, Jay.
WB2AHK, what a question.
KDQFIU.
We got three people on the roster. Frank tried to get in, and he's on Echolink, so it's a problem. So if you can, let's do Frank first. Then we'll do Chet, and then we'll do George. How's that?
WB2BXO here. Shall I go ahead?
Yes, indeed, Frank.
Thank you, Net Control. anyway. My homework, so to speak, haven't read the article. But I'm understanding, I think what I'm hearing is that the carbon fiber is presumably acting as a waveguide at 20 meters, and the signal is being focused vertically at the end of the tube, in other words, going straight up, so it's an NVIS radiator. Or is it carbon fiber conductor, so it's acting more or less as a normal vertical with the gain at the horizon? I guess, Jay, go ahead. I'm not sure whether I'm really tossing it back to Jay or to Roy.
Yeah, the carbon fiber tube surrounds the entire vertical, and there is a slot. 1/16-inch slot that's cut in the tube from the top all the way down to the bottom, one continuous slot. And it appears that the RF exits through that slot and no place else. And it's 1/16 slot. It gives you about a 3-degree beam width. So it's very sharp. It has nothing to do with the top of the tube. Although somebody did say, if I don't use a slot, I did get a lot of, I received over 100 emails from different readers of the article. And one person said, if I don't use the slot, it's just a straight tube and I put a cap at the top, carbon fiber with a little hole in it, he said, maybe I can use it to operate Earth, Moon, Earth. Bounce the signal off the moon. What do you think of that one, Roy?
Well, you never know unless you try, Jay.
What is the gain of the antenna? I realize this is probably in the article. With 3 degree bandwidth, what is your gain in front to back? Do you know, Jay?
Well, the gain on my 20-meter Yagi, I have a homebrew computer designed 20-meter Yagi. Chet described it as 7 elements. He added 2 elements. It's actually a 5-element on a 42-foot of boom. And when I pointed it at Europe and I compared it with the slotted ground plane, the slotted ground plane was being received between 5 and 6 S units stronger than my 20-meter Yagi, which really shocked me. Go ahead.
That's fantastic if accurate, and if you compare it to something, it's entirely possible. It certainly does sound like a dramatic breakthrough, and I would imagine at a scale, say, to 10 meters, it might be a practical beam antenna for an apartment dweller on the 10-meter band, conceivably. Anyway, sounds really interesting. Just trying to figure out the catch, because typically in engineering or anything else in life, you don't get something for nothing. Go ahead, Jay.
Okay. All right. Was there another person in there that wanted to ask a question?
Yeah, Chet is next.
Okay, Jay. This is not anything having to do with amateur radio. I'm just asking for your speculation on my what I'm saying here. Could you speculate that if a car was built completely, 100%, I know, of course, you have glass and all, but assuming that, forget about the glass on the car, if you could build a vehicle, a car, with 100% carbon fiber of the type you're talking about, and it acts as a shield, it has a shielding effect, like the fighter pilots you talked about, could this, a vehicle built with 100% material that you use, could that evade police radar and he wouldn't get a speeding ticket even if he was doing 150 miles an hour?
Possibly. Sounds like a good concept. I think you should, Chet, I think you should maybe make a small model. Maybe like a foot and a half length small model. And maybe shoot it out in front of a police radar. Contact your local Floral Park police and tell them you want to do an experiment with their radar. Shoot it out with a spring-loaded device to get it running at speed to see if they could see it with their radar.
Or if you build a drone out of the same material, then a radar wouldn't pick up the drone. This is scary stuff, Jay. Go ahead.
Well, as I said, some of the aircraft by the military, they have a carbon fiber type of a paint, which is supposed to, I'm sure you've heard about, I think the B-1 bomber has it, possibly the Blackbird, SR-71 Blackbird, and maybe the F-35 has that, where it's supposed to be very difficult to spot with, present-day radar.
Okay, thank you. Back to Roy. Thank you, Jay. Very interesting.
And I have additional questions.
Yeah, Wesley recognized, but first comes George. So basically, we're talking about a stealth car. You know, it's not enough we have a stealth fighter, we need a stealth car. I don't know exactly what the piece of carbon fibers is, so you got to factor that into the equation. It might be cheaper to just get the damn ticket. Of course, carbon fiber has this one terrible backstory. The poor guy who did the submarine in order to you know, for the boat, and really didn't test it well, and the poor thing just exploded because carbon fiber is a kind of heterogeneous material. You can't really depend on the uniformity, and most submarine hulls are made out of solid titanium, which is much more uniform. Anyway, George, you wanted to say something.
Thank you, Roy, KD2FIU, and good evening, Jay. Good to hear you. I like the idea. Well, first of all, like the guy, one of the guys who helped end World War II, patent this without a doubt. It's sounding good. First question is, can we find a carbon fiber spray? It would make it much lighter. Even if it had to be redone every year or two or three. Over to Jay, please. KD2, how are you, George?
Good question, George. Maybe that's another thing, another product that Chet can work on, a carbon fiber spray. Maybe Chet, contact the people from Rust-Oleum, their technical department, and then pose the idea to them. Maybe you can start manufacturing a spray can of a carbon fiber.
Jay, another thing is the design is basically a quarter up and a quarter out. Is that correct?
I'm not sure what you mean by a quarter out, but only the vertical radiator had the carbon fiber tube. The radials did not.
Okay, quarter wave up with the carbon fiber, directional, and then radials.
That's correct.
Okay, so to actually rotate this, we're going to need to have radials built on a base that are actual metal radials themselves and not fixed wire radials.
Only the carbon fiber tube needs to be rotated.
All right, so yeah, that will make a little bit difficult with the wiring at the base. So you would have to have loops of wire to allow it to radiate so that you have wires fixed as aerial radials. And I like the height that you're working with. The height is good. It doesn't have to be very, very high. Very good, Jay, NE2Q, KD2FIU. Good to hear you, man.
Thank you, George. Good to hear you on.
Wesley, you wanted to ask him something?
Yeah, I would appreciate if there would be an explanation. What is the difference between metal fiber that is conductive and fiber carbon that is conductive? What difference does it make? Intuition.
I have no idea. I have not did not compare the two types of material.
Well, you got to keep in mind that carbon is actually described as a semiconductor, not really a conductor. So it's very similar to silicon that way.
If we try to go there to this. Leverage, and then the question would be, what